Welcome to the Generations Radio Broadcast. My name is Kevin Swanson, host of the program, Father of Five. Dave Buhner also in studio with me, another Father of Five. Commenting on the breakdown of Western civilization from our basement out here in the Eastern Plains of Colorado. And friends, the Oscars is a good measure of what's going on around us. We're going to put our hand on the pulse of the culture in just a moment and talk about what happened at the Oscars ceremony. But Dave, the Oscars ceremony took place a little earlier this week, and the sleaze factor just seems to be increasing with each year. In fact, the ratings, I understand, were terrible this year.
Well, I think they are terrible because it's getting to be more juvenile, it's getting to be more decadent, and it's getting to be less tasteful.
Yeah, Franco and Hathaway, the hosts of the Oscars presentation, came out in cross-dress. In other words, I guess they just did the whole abomination thing. Of course, something that God considers to be an abomination, Deuteronomy 22, verse 5, says it's an abomination for a man to dress as a woman to dress as a man, something our culture, of course, has a hard time with. But Franco and Hathaway appeared to cross-dress, and it just looked very odd, very strange. Sort of like some kind of a sleazy red light district, homos hanging out watching the cross-dressers doing their thing.
So the typical Hollywood.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of the problem, is that the Hollywood culture has lost all its gravitas and has instead gone for the poodle in the tutu.
Yeah, you don't get the Charlton Heston, John Wayne sort of feel about Hollywood these days. It has, I think, degraded over the years. Now, Hollywood has never been the paradigm of goodness and righteousness. I mean, it tends to set a direction for the nation that is negative. It is certainly not righteousness as the standard in Hollywood.
Well, it's never been a super righteous place, but it had been back in the day, the Republic Studios and in the earlier studio days. The actors were somebody you could look up to. Now, they had a secret life, but it wasn't all over the magazines when you went to go check out. You weren't hearing about six divorces and the orgy and being busted for coke and showing up in court with bulging necklines and on it goes. I mean, we all know the tripe that's out there. But now we take what should be shameful, and the difference is we take that and we put it out in front of everybody and put it on display, and we call it a big award show. The people who are hosting are becoming more and more juvenile, less and less mature in every which way you can cut it. The quality of the acting has become more nihilistic. It just doesn't have the force and the gravitas that we once had in Hollywood.
We're seeing a decline in the mean or the average is what we're saying, friends. We're not talking about the standard deviation. We're not talking about the range. Certainly there are some good things that happen in society and culture around us. Certainly San Antonio Independent Christian Film Festival brings out some halfway decent movies and movies that probably ought to gain some national acclaim for what they have done. And of course, they don't always get as much of acclaim as they should, perhaps. But there are some good things happening in the culture around us, and we like to point to certain things from time to time. This particular Oscar award ceremony was a mix, and I'd say there were some good things and there's some bad things. On average, things are going in a negative direction, I think, Dave. But the King's speech made some real waves in the Hollywood culture, and I watched the movie, so we're going to talk about that in just a moment. Black Swan did well, and The Fighter did well. All these three took home awards. Now, I was a little disappointed that True Grit, although nominated as a best film and had some other nominations, did not receive an award. True Grit, a remake of the old John Wayne film, had some positive aspects to it, Dave. There were references to the Book of Proverbs. I mean, right when you walk into the film, the first frame was a proverb that recognized the justice of God. There were some halfway decent references to the Christian God throughout the film, True Grit. And it is true that a young girl goes after the man who killed her father. And there is some, I think, tendency towards wanting to gain that vengeance themselves. But it wasn't just a personal vengeance issue. It seemed to be a commitment to bring the man to justice throughout. And I like that. I like it when you have people going after the bad guy. Now, granted, they went into Indian territory, so it was a little bit like the Avenger of Blood in the Old Testament, where there's not a lot of law and order in the area in which you're functioning, and a number of the bad guys got shot. In fact, I can't remember a single bad guy who actually was brought to justice. justice and had a fair trial. So in that regard, True Grit may not have been the best movie for exalting a biblical standard of justice. But nevertheless, there was a sense of justice, a sense of God's existence, a recognition of the redemption of God, the grace of God. The only thing free is the grace of God, was one of the comments the young lady made. There was certainly a recognition of a Christian culture. And that was one of the things you're going to see in some movies that are fairly true to the historical situation, Dave, and True Grit was attempting to do that. There has to be some recognition of church, of Christian values, of the Christian faith in the Christianized West, or the Christianized countries, as in America and England. Now, that brings up The King's Speech, which was a movie that I think got the Best Motion Picture of the Year award at the Oscars ceremony this week. And The King's Speech was an interesting movie. I went to see that as well. It was a true story. It was a simple story. It was straightforward and natural in terms of its delivery. One of the best scripts I think I've seen, with some problems, and we'll get to that in just a moment. But one of the things that was very interesting, again, bringing in the culture, it was fairly true to history, bringing in the Christian culture that was still extant in the 1930s when this thing took place. And it's interesting that England at that point saw divorce as a terrible, terrible thing. They wouldn't allow a king to marry a divorcee. And so when King George V passed away, his son acceded to the throne, and he was about to marry a divorcee. And because this was against the standards, the norms, the Christian standards that had been established for 1,000 years previous to this, the man had to give up the throne to his younger brother. And it was the younger brother who had the speech impediment. And it's very interesting, Dave, that today I don't think that would ever be a concern at all for the King of England. We are so far past a Christian culture. We have a total breakdown of social systems in the present day that we would, I don't think, ever, ever, ever think twice about bringing a king to the throne or a president to the top office of the land who was a divorcee. I don't think that would be an issue at all in the present day. Why? Because we don't care. Our leaders can be as dysfunctional as the day is long. Who cares about that? It was an issue in the movie The King's Speech. Now, let me hit a few other things before we get back to the real issue that I want to discuss today. The other movie that did fairly well was The Black Swan. This was a movie on sexual nihilism. I haven't seen it. I looked at the plugged-in review. I wouldn't recommend even reading the plugged-in review about Black Swan, but another horrific movie about modern-day sexual nihilism. The woman commits suicide at the end. She's a lesbian, and it's a terrible, terrible story, but pretty much reflects the values of the present day. So that movie did fairly well. Also, a movie called The Fighter did pretty well. Lots and lots of sex, violence, 150 F-words, Dave, if you can believe that. I'm quoting Plugged In Review here. Well, I don't have to spend much time driving home the point that this is a hard R movie, says the guy from Plugged In Review. 2 hours of crude content that knocks moviegoers down for the count, yet I saw 8 to 10-year-old kids at the screening I attended. Had I more Alice or Charlene in me, I would have accused their parents of child abuse, and he's referring to some of the characters in the movie The Fighter. But a fairly gritty, raw movie presenting a dysfunctional family trying not to become even more dysfunctional. Yeah, Dave, I'd say that would be one of the worst movies you could see this year would be The Fighter. But anyway, Dave, we've got a number of different movies. The one drawback of The King's Speech was similar to the problem I have with The Fighter, and that would be constant reference to foul words such as the F word, and the F word was used in King's Speech. And one of the things that the king was doing, and I'm not sure if this was true to the story, it didn't feel like it belonged to the story. It was the one part of the story that didn't flow naturally. But it just seemed to me that you have a king who's having a hard time speaking, but whenever he gets angry and uses foul language, he can speak fairly smoothly. So throughout this time he spent with his speech therapist, he would sometimes launch into a long strings of foul words, using the F word, the S word, and so forth and so on. And the movie The King's Speech earned an R rating for that reason. It was pure language that earned it the rating. I thought, again, that the language was uncalled for. There was no need for that aspect. It was true that the king had to go through certain exercises. I mean, he had to get down on the floor and roll on balls and things and do certain things that you don't think kings would want to do. He did some things to humble himself in order to bring about a better flow in his speech. And
teleprompters?
No teleprompters.
Oh, because that's the kind of thing you might do.
Yeah. But, you know, I'd say that the movie was decent except for the fact that there was this foul language, which is, in my estimation, unnecessary.
Well, I think what we have here is the junior high taking over Hollywood, Kevin. I mean, you have to ask, where have all the adults gone? And we don't define adults by those who just find it neat to say F words all the time. We see in the awards ceremony that the people are dropping bad words. You're receiving their awards, making political speeches that frankly show that there is no civics training in America whatsoever. The gravitas, and I keep going back to that word. I mean, you think about Gary Cooper or Clark Gable or Humphrey Bogart or Paul Newman. I mean, these are the people who have been there in the past. We're now a bunch of junior high kids up there giggling, you know, about that. He said that word. He said that word. And this is, I'm afraid, where the culture has really been directed. I'm not sure if Hollywood's leading it or following it, but certainly Hollywood's reflecting it.
Well, the redeeming features of modern motion pictures at this point is only those that seem to dabble in historical features, those that go back into history, goes back in the 1800s and the early 1900s and bring out life from a previous era. When they do that, there seems to be something redeeming. When they go back and deal with true history, and by the way, true history is a reflection of God's metaphysic because God is involved in his story. God's hand is in history. So when they present something that is somewhat halfway true to history, we get a fairly decent message out of it. That's my point. But the rest of it, forget it. Anytime you get Hollywood producers dabbling in it, anytime you get a modern worldview that kicks in, anytime you get a modern actor trying to play a part from a previous century, you're going to have some problems with the delivery there. But friends, I'm telling you right now, we're really living some of the good times and some of the movies that we're seeing, but the present day is not too good in terms of the destruction of modern culture, and I think that's reflected by the movie Black Swan. Well, in just a moment, friends, I'm going to get back to this issue of language, because language is important, and recently some of us witnessed a pastor using the S word in a documentary. And World Magazine also recently sort of defended Christian bands that are taking up using the F word. So it's important right now for Christians to take a biblical perspective on language and impose it upon the world around us. We're going to do that in just a moment on Generation. Stay with me.
There's a worldview war going on right now. One radio program gives you full frontline coverage. More of Generations in a moment.
I have always felt that doubt was the beginning of wisdom, and the fear of God was the end of wisdom.
Clarence Darrow.
The only true wisdom is knowing that you know nothing.
Socrates.
Belief is the death of intelligence.
Robert Anton Wilson.
If thou trustest to the book called the Scriptures, thou trustest to the rotten staff of fables and falsehood.
Thomas Paine.
Faith is believing what you know ain't so.
Mark Twain.
Whoever trusts in his own mind is a fool, but he who walks in wisdom will be delivered.
God.
The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and knowledge of the Holy One is insight.
God.
The fool believes his own ideas to be wisdom, but those who fear God and search for understanding find true wisdom. To lead your family in the pursuit of godliness, pick up a copy of the Proverbs Study Guide at generationswithvision.com.
And we're back on the Generations Radio broadcast today talking about the Academy Awards. And the Academy Awards went to a number of films, The King's Speech, Black Swan, and The Fighter. All of which would take God's name in vain, use the F word, the S word prolifically. And friends, what we're saying is that the present system is moving more and more away from a biblical perspective of things, and certainly in the area of language. We're going to talk about that in this next section of the program. But first, here's a story from South Bend, Indiana. Apparently, these parents picked up a CD at a local Walmart, and the CD was objectionable. She's glad her four-year-old son, Calden, never listened to the compact disc which a relative had bought him for Christmas. At least two of the 12 songs, riddled with profanities, including the F-word. In fact, none of the music is the type you'd play for kids. Wilson said the relative bought the CD at Walmart's store. Wilson's husband, Jeff, started listening to the CD early this week. He was shocked at the words in the song Ugly. Aside from the F-words, it carries an adult theme. I don't want to get into what the adult theme was. On the back, the CD cover states, your kids will love these versions of today's biggest hits, reinterpreted especially for them. Dave, imagine getting that for Christmas. Imagine getting that for Christmas. Your kids will love these versions of today's biggest hits, reinterpreted especially for them. They probably took out about 140 F-words, probably accidentally left about 60 of them in.
Well, perhaps
this is music, friends. This is where music is today. And the music for kids filled with the F-words. A national Walmart spokeswoman, Melissa Hill, said the company became aware of the CD's profanity Monday from the company that supplies the CD to Walmart. Walmart's removing the CD from all the stores across the country. La-di-da-di-da-di-da. So, Dave, apparently it wasn't a CD for kids, but my guess is there are an awful lot of kids that listen to this music anyway. I mean, the point is, they listen to it. I mean, okay, maybe it's only the 14 and 15-year-olds that are listening to it, and this 9-year-old kid wasn't supposed to be listening to it. Dave, as the years go by, you know that it's going to be younger and younger, and you know the music's going to become increasingly profane.
Yes, Kevin, it is the locker room syndrome. When kids are in junior high, they like to go in the locker room and they like to yuck it up about the most juvenile things. It's interesting what they call adult content. What do they call adult content? Isn't very adult at all.
Yeah.
It's very juvenile. It may be adult subject matter in some respect or married subject matter, but it is very juvenile in its treatment. It's very immature. It takes a small mind to drop F-bombs all the time, rather than to find a word that actually works.
I think one of the problems you have is a reduction of vocabulary. In other words, many people are down to 7-8 words, and they only have one adjective, and it starts with an F. You know, you only have one adjective. I mean, you're a hurtin'. You're a hurtin' puppy. You've got to use the adjective for everything. And that's one of the problems, of course, with modern language. It's imprecise. Extremely imprecise, and we need to teach our children to really understand what they're saying and what it means. Dave, this is what happens in a culture that is moving away from the idea of meaning and purpose. They're no longer seeing that words mean stuff, and they don't even care what the words mean. They're just saying whatever comes to mind, and they tend to be, as you just said, grunts, emotional words that reflect an attitude.
It's like,
but it really doesn't define a statement that is propositional, that has meaning to it, that communicates something from one person to the next. It might communicate an emotion, but that's about it. You may remember the interviews we've done recently on music. The whole romanticism thing brought out the idea that music's about emotion. It doesn't matter what the words mean. It just is supposed to reflect some kind of an emotional impulse, and the emotional impulse, unfortunately, that a lot of children are picking up is one of anger, of bitterness, of, you know, calling this F and that S and so forth and so on. It tends to be a very, very negative, sharply negative approach to life.
This is part of the problem with an education system that really works towards the lowest common denominator. Now, it's a far cry difference between saying that lunch, that sandwich there looked succulent, and saying, you know, it was like so good, it was like, ha, okay, which is the way language is right now, and I wish I were exaggerating, but it's not. Finding the precise adjective to fit the situation takes some work, it takes some education. So first you'd have a dumbed-down education. We know for years that newspapers were written at the 8th grade level because most people wouldn't read an article if it was written at a 12th grade level. Well, the fact of the matter is that most 12th graders couldn't read at a 12th grade level. They could only read at an 8th grade level. So you have an education component here as well as a cultural component, a degrading of the culture.
Yes.
Hollywood has wanted to be edgy, and by edgy they mean immoral. That is, they always wanted to push the boundaries of morality. To really be edgy in Hollywood right now, you would give God glory for your Oscar. That would be edgy.
Well, Dave, World Magazine has an article about Christian bands now that are more likely to use the F word. Believe it or not, I mean, that shocked me in and of itself. It was even more shocking to discover that World Magazine was flirting with the idea of defending the use of the F word in some of these quote-unquote Christian music CDs. So, ladies and gentlemen, I think we need to step back and ask ourselves, can Christians use this language? And how do we interact when that language is being used around us? And do we take our children into an arena where that language is being used constantly? Or perhaps do we eliminate as much of that as we possibly can for our children? Well, Dave, first of all, I think we should acknowledge that there are different forms of profanity. And let's just draw these distinctions. First of all, you've got those who use God's name in vain. Then you have those using what I would call violent curses. And then you have gutter language. All right, so I'm going to draw some distinctions there. The worst thing you can possibly do, and this is in opposition to the third commandment, is to take God's name in vain. Now, we've said this before, but on most radio, television, HBO channels, you can take God's name in vain all day long. Nobody cares. But that is the very worst thing to do. You take God's name in vain, take Jesus' name in vain, say the word Jeez, which is a reference to Jesus, and Christians do this. I would much rather Christians use the F word than to take God's name in vain. I would much rather them use the S word than to take God's name in vain. I mean, that's number one. Okay, so there's taking God's name in vain. That's the first category. Second category are what I would call violent curses. Now, the F word refers to rape. Now, Dave, you remember that the Vice President of the United States called the health care bill a big raping deal. I mean, he used the word F.
And he probably found the precise word for what the health care bill was.
Yeah, he did. I mean, he pretty much defined it the best way he could,
right,
with the kind of language that he had accessible to him. That's the Vice President of the United States, friends, about a year ago. But use the F word. Now, the F word is a reference to rape, and that rape is a very negative thing. It's a very bad thing. It's something you probably don't want to mention very much. It's a violent, horrible act that, in most cases, according to biblical law, would warrant the death penalty. So that's a very negative, violent thing to do to somebody else, is rape. Now, there's another violent curse word, and that is the D word, D-A-M-N. I'm not even going to say it right now, because this is worse than the F word. Why is it worse? Because somebody getting raped is not as bad as somebody going to hell forever and ever. So if you were to wish somebody to get raped, that's one thing. If you're going to wish somebody to go to hell, that's even worse. So when you use the H word or use the D word, D-A-M-N, towards somebody else, that is far, far worse than the use of the F word, because the F word is bad enough. I wouldn't recommend using it at all. I think it's a terrible, terrible thing. It's very sharp. It's very violent. It's a terrible thing to wish upon somebody else. So those would be violent curses. Then you have the gutter language. You have language that are fairly sharp, references to manure and to urine. And there is the what we would call the P word. By the way, the P word was used in the Old Testament in the King James Version of the Bible. So 400 years ago, they're using the word P, the P word for urine, was acceptable in society. Now, you can see how society has changed over time, so we're hesitant to use that sort of word because it seems a little sharper reference to urine than the urine word. So we would prefer that sort of word. We have these three categories, and there are different reasons why we should, I think, avoid these references to urine and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, these other things. And number one, though, I think we should be very careful here. The Bible does quote that blasphemies. We see this in the book of Jeremiah, where Jeremiah quotes what Sennacherib said to the children of Israel in Hezekiah's presence. You remember Sennacherib brought blasphemies against the God of Israel, the God who created the universe. He was blasphemous, and these things were quoted. So it's not wrong, necessarily, to quote somebody who said some blasphemous statement. But I think the quotation marks have to be fairly clear. Now, you can quote, unquote it. You can, when you're speaking it, you can do it on paper, which is probably the most convenient way to do it. If you want to quote somebody who's committed a blasphemy, it would be appropriate to do that on paper. It might be even appropriate to do it in a talk or what have you. But make sure that everybody knows you are quoting what somebody else said. It's not inappropriate to do that, Dave. And I think we have to be very cautious here. The Christians out there get very uncomfortable when somebody quotes somebody else. The Bible does it. It's appropriate. When somebody is making blasphemous statements, it's all right to say, now this person said, quote unquote, and use the word. That's all right. That's legitimate. It's done in Scripture in the case of a king who is blasphemous against the God of Israel. And of course, he received the judgment of God towards him for his blasphemies.
I think we need to make an understanding of what profanity means and what obscenity is. Profanity means unholy. And since we're to live holy, we ought not be engaging in profanity. It's just, you know, you have the holy and you have the profane, those things that are set aside for holy purpose and those things that are not. Well, our speech ought to be salted with grace and holiness. Ergo, no profanity. Now, obscenity has to do with the concept of the Greek theater of things that happened off stage. But we have to communicate the idea that something happened. But we're not going to defile the audience by showing it. So you may have, for instance, a murder. The murder, you could hear the scream, but you didn't have to show it. And so the fact of the murder is stated, but it is not enjoyed in slow motion with blood spilling all over the place and so forth. And when we quote other people, what we're really doing is taking an obscenity and saying, such and such happened. We're not engaging in profanity. We're trying to be holy, but we have to be holy sometimes in contrast or towards, by saying, this is the antithesis. This is what blasphemy sounds like and is.
What we're encouraging you to do, friends, is to think critically through these things. Don't just come out and say, you don't want to do any of this. Well, you have to give a reason for why you don't want to do any of this. And we're doing that right now in the program, so listen carefully. The Christian, I believe, can use harsh language to condemn certain things. We see the prophets doing this. They condemn certain things. They liken certain things to excrement in the prophecies. Why? Because the Bible does the same thing. They liken our righteousness as filthy rags or menstrual rags. And these are things that you don't talk about in polite company all that much. Now, occasionally, you might apply these sorts of analogies or metaphors in appropriate context. But here's the other aspect of this. The Christian must be careful not to offend the sensibilities of people who don't need to be offended. So there are some people that don't need to be offended. So you're walking around the house and you're offending the sensibilities of your people in your own nice little, you know, Christian home by throwing out these violent words and describing things in violent terms and so forth and so on. You're bringing out the sorts of things that don't need to be brought out in that particular company. And finally, there's nothing wrong with describing something as manure occasionally. As I just mentioned, the Christian, however, ought to be careful not to be bringing it up all the time. We don't stay on the negative. We don't stay on the sinful and the evil that's out there. We don't dwell on those sorts of things. Here's the verse that really controls what we ought to be saying. Let no corrupting communication proceed out of your mouth, but that which is good to the use of edifying, that it may minister grace to the hearers. That's the verse that really matters. Now, what is corrupting communicate? It's the communication that corrupts other people. It doesn't edify them. It doesn't build them up. It may be constantly negative communication. You may not even be using horribly sharp language, but it's still corrupting them. It's not encouraging them. It's not building them up in the faith. So we got to be really careful with the words that we choose. Dave, let me close with this. You can use different words for making a mistake. You could tell your son, you really messed up there. You could tell your son, you really fouled that up. Or you could say, you really screwed that up, son. Now, see, Dave, you have three different words there, mess, foul, and screw. Now, as I went through that, you could tell that with each additional word used there, it was a sharper sort of a rebuke. And I think we got to be careful with the words we choose. Sometimes when we choose a word, we've chosen it because we're angry and we don't want to edify our sons. We don't want to build up our sons. And we just want to cut them down. And so I think it's important to choose the right word, choose it carefully. I'm not saying we don't ever use the word fouled it up. I'm not saying we don't ever use the word screwed it up. But I'm saying we have to be careful. We have to choose the right word and not be always this sharp-edged, bitter, angry approach to the world around us.
Well, and that's good. It doesn't mean that you can't use some colloquial expressions, especially if you're trying to do it in order to soften an edge. But yes, we ought to choose our language well. We ought to know what it connotates and what it denotates.
So things denote certain things, but they connote other things. We have to be sensitive to both because we are, after all, representatives of Christ to our children, to people around us. May our language be salted with grace, but may we be bold to correct error and sin where it exists.
And sharper language certainly can be used against what we're against. Sharper language, Christ used sharper language against those that were not walking in his ways and accepting God's principles in Matthew chapter 23. So it's appropriate, I think, sometimes to use sharp language, especially towards the world, the lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. But Dave, we're to love the brothers. We're to be kind one to another, tender-hearted, forgiving one another, even as God, for Christ's sake, has forgiven us. And that means that in our family life, we have got to maintain kind language, loving language. Certainly, we need to correct our children from time to time, but we have to be careful with the sharpness of the tone, the sharpness of the words that we choose for those situations. Ladies and gentlemen, I hope this discussion has been helpful for you as we talk about the use of language, and it's coming out of the degradation of language that we're seeing in the films, in the culture around us, and I hope that as Christians we can establish a higher standard, a better standard, certainly a more precise and a more righteous standard in the use of language. You can interact with the program by emailing me at host@kevinswanson.com. You can also hear the program anytime, anywhere in the world at kevinswanson.com. This is Kevin Swanson, and I want to invite you back again next time as we continue to lay down a vision for the next generation.